So good afternoon, everyone. So this afternoon, sutta class that the suttas that we're going to talk about this from the Samyutta Nikaya, the simile of the great log. And the one of the reason why I choose, yes. The last class, because I wasn't here, I don't know what sutta said to you. Oh, you mean the rebirth? Okay. I think because they're going to have on the 20, another class will be on the 20, end of the month, 20. Is it 29? The last Sunday, 29. So, yes, I think it's better that you bring that up because, yeah. Yeah, early Buddhism, yeah. So, because they talk about the rebirth, isn't it? Last time you came for, Yes. Yes, one of the reasons I choose is because I remember the first time when I read these suttas. And it really struck me. That time I was just newly ordained. So when I read this suttas, it really struck me because this is how, you know, a lot of things look seems to be very small, but sometimes they got sidetracked. I mean, even sometimes wholesome things, you know, we try to justify this is good for us. We do a little bit this, little bit of that. We get off the track. And then this is how we sidetrack. And this, then we never be able to have progress in the path. And if we get caught, you know, do a little bit of this and do a little bit of that. And because we, most of these things that is not that it's really immoral itself. It's just like, it's remind me of Ajahn Chah used to say, he said, the fact that why so many people very difficult to get enlightened is not that they're doing horrible things, especially said the monks. Mostly they don't do, most of us don't do things that really, you know, terrible, like, you know, like intentionally causing anyone's harms, you know, like we don't, even sometimes we harm someone is because of ignorance, because of not knowing, isn't it? Because of our delusion. So, but because of the underlying tendency, because it's so sata. So that's why it's important that sometimes I remember when I was in the early days, so I always like to read those suttas, like, you know, like very eager, you want to go into the deep state, you want to be, you know, get enlightened. And actually we tend to overlook a lot of small little things. And actually we don't have a good foundation. So we don't do the basic well. You know, we don't really, you know, practice our basic, our foundation. So straight away we want to go to the, you know, deep state. But you need to have the foundation. It's because sometimes this foundation actually spend more time. Like for us, like our building project, actually we spend more time on the paper, planning. Actually the building itself takes us, you know, 8-9 months, you know. But we take 4 years. The planning, the approval, you know, and all this takes much longer. But because most of us, like, we are, you know, impatient, we always want to get into, you know, we always think that, oh, I don't have much time, I better get enlightened this life, or, you know, I better, at least I get somewhere. You know, and just like yesterday in the meditation class, that we meditate is not to get something, you know. Actually, it's just a path of letting go. You keep letting go. So, and actually, this suttas is about like how we always get caught and sidetrack, you know, along the path, you know, along our, when we practice. So, and then, and these are the things always like, you know, really, we, very easily we get sidetracked and do all these things. And sometimes we waste even the whole of our life doing things that not quite really helpful to our practice, but we think that is helpful. But basically, things that are not really, sometimes some of those things that are not really immoral by itself. But it's just like, for example, when we reborn, we are in this samsara. because of the craving, you know, the desires to be reborn, to be, you know, and craving to be. So it's not that it's wrong. It's just that if we reborn and then we're in the samsara and we just, you know, if you don't mind, keep coming back, you know, it's fine. But if you want to get out, then you have to stop craving, you know. So it's not craving itself that is good or bad. So it's up to us, you know. If you think that, okay, I don't mind, I'm quite happy to come back again and again, it's fine. You know, so it's just like the Buddha keeps saying that, you know, anything that is unwholesome, unskillful, just leads us to suffering. And things that's wholesome and skillful that lead us to fear us and lead us to happiness is not good or bad. It's not that it's evil, you know, or terrible if we are doing something unskillful. It's just that the Buddha said unwholesome. Anything that is unwholesome will lead us to suffering. Anything that is wholesome that we do lead us to freedom and lead us to happiness. So I'm going to start this reading these suttas, and after you can stop me if you want to ask any questions. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi on the bank of River Ganges. The Blessed One saw a great log being carried along by the currents of the River Ganges, and he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Do you see, bhikkhus, that great log being carried along by the currents of the River Ganges?" "Yes, Venerable Sir." "If, bhikkhus, that log does not veer towards the near shore, does not veer towards the far shore, does not sink in midstream, does not get cast up on high ground, does not get caught by human beings, does not get caught by non-human beings, does not get caught in whirlpool, and does not become inwardly rotten, it will slant, slope, and incline towards the ocean. For what reason? Because the current of the River Ganges slant, slope, and inclines towards the ocean. So too, bhikkhus, if you do not veer towards the near shore, do not veer towards the far shore, do not sink in midstream, do not get cast up on high ground, do not get caught by human beings, do not get caught by non-human beings, do not get caught in a whirlpool, and do not become inwardly rotten, you will slant, slope, and incline towards Nibbana. For what reason? Because right view slants, slopes, and inclines towards Nibbana. So this is here when it's mentioned this right wheel slant, slope, and inclines towards Nibbana. Actually, it's referred to practicing of the Noble Four Path, because the first factor of the Noble Four Path is right wheel, because everything starts from right wheel. When you have right wheel, then you have the right understanding, then you have right intention, and the right speech, right action, and right livelihood, right effort, concentration, and right mindfulness. So this is how, this is the reason why right view is important, because whatever practice that we take up, you know, if we have wrong understanding, you know, have these wrong views, and we were, instead of leading us to the right directions, we will go opposite directions. So from here, actually, it's mentioned, it's referred to that if we practice Noble Four Path, that is start with right view, then this will lead us to Nibbana. So when this was said, a certain bhikkhus asked the Blessed One, "What, Venerable Sir, is the near shore? What is the far shore? What is sinking in midstream? What is getting cast up high ground? What is getting caught by human beings? What is getting caught by non-human beings? What is getting caught in the whirlpool? What is inward rottenness?" Then the Buddha explained, "So what is the near shore?" The Buddha said, "The near shore, because this is destination for the six internal sense ways. The far shore is destination for the six external sense ways." That means that our six sense ways, our eye sense base, ear, you know, touching, seeing, You know, our sixth sense base, our hearing, you know, all this, we have to have our, ear sense base in order to hear. So eyes, you know, smelling, tasting, touching, you know, that, and then a mind object, this is the sixth, our internal, sixth sense base. So, this is, and then the, he said, why he said that, why is this a problem that we have this six internal six sense base, and also the far shore is the destination for the six external sense base, that is the object. So we have our six sense base and we have the object. So usually this is the reason why when we have the sense base and we have this object, so when there is a contact, feeling arises, that usually we get caught because of we don't see where we attach to. We got hooked up, like on Friday I talk about that, you know. So because, for example, we get so caught up, you know, when we hear something, you know, like someone said nasty thing to us, we got very upset, very angry. You know, and we see something that we like, we attach to that, isn't it? And we like to hear something good, and we reject to something that is unpleasant, you know, and then we got hooked, you know, then we've been carried away, and then we create lots of suffering for ourselves, you know, we get caught in this, you know, and because of we have this sixth sense base. So actually this is not a matter of that we have no hearing, no seeing, no touching. It's not about that, you know. It's about because of we are not mindful, so we don't know. We this is our reaction, you know. Actually, when there is a contact, and there is three kinds of feelings arises, either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. But of course, we normally get caught with the unpleasant and pleasant feelings. Normally, the neutral feelings wouldn't get caught, you know, when we are, it's a neutral feelings. So this is why we get caught in, we get caught because of the when there's a sense object and the sense based contact and feelings arises. So that is how we react to whatever feelings. So when the feelings is pleasant, we leads to greed, isn't it? We want more greediness, and then we want to hold on to it. And then if we can't get it, for example, if someone always praises, if one day they don't praise us, we got a bit upset. But this time, this person don't praise us because we want that. We want more of those things, you know. And when someone criticizes us, then we got upset. We think that the person is terrible because that person, you know, upset us. But the problem is we can't see that actually whatever feelings arises in this moment, actually it comes and go. You know, it's just like when there is a contact, it's just like you have the spark. So that is a spark. So actually if you leave it, the unpleasant feeling, the pleasant feelings, it subsides by itself. Actually, we don't have to do anything. But the problem is, we immediately hook on. We attach to that. Unpleasant and pleasant feelings. Unpleasant, we try to push it away. And we got get upset. And then we keep doing that. And each time, you know, we reinforce that feelings. For example, if someone criticizes, so the first time we meet this person, maybe, you know, the person criticizes and we got upset with the person. And then the next time, immediately when we see this person, because based on our previous experience, you know, because of the experience, and then naturally, even the person before opened their mouth, you know, we immediately have that unpleasant feeling. We immediately identify, we label that we don't like him, we don't like this person, you know. And this is how. And we keep, and then we develop a way of a certain way of a certain views of that person, how this person is. And we reinforce that, and we believe that this is the truth. And that's why, just imagine, if you always get caught in this, our mind will not be peaceful, isn't it? We constantly being, you know, influenced by the people, you know, around us, the things that happen around us. We got influence, we get carried away. We not be able to really focus, we not be able really to see, you know, that what's wrong. And sometimes we thought that something wrong with the world, something wrong with the outside, something wrong with everybody, we blame everyone, you know. So we don't see that actually it's just that the contact is give rise to feelings. And we leave it alone, and it comes and goes. It's not a problem at all. But because we got hooked, we can't see that where we got hooked. So that's like when we attach to this sixth sense base and also our external sense object, and this is something that will not we get caught, then we will not be able to continue the path, and then we are not heading the right directions towards the ocean. The ocean actually is referred to Nibbana. So we are not, you know, certainly we, instead of, you know, just follow the stream, keep practicing, and then we get caught in the near shore, far shore. That is our sixth sense space and our sense object. So this is how, because sometimes we tend to underestimate and overlook these things. Actually, itself is not that it's good or bad. You know, it's just that if we really want to free ourselves, then certain things we have to give up. And actually, this reminds me that many, many years ago when I was in Thailand. So then, usually Uposatha, we have a Dharma discussion. So one of the senior monks talked about how if you want to have a peaceful mind, some of the things you have to give up. Isn't it? You cannot always constantly go to disco, you know, go for a movie. It's not, watching movie is bad. You know what I mean? Like if you, and then you're always very busy, you know, you get a lot of distraction, you know. So if you want to have the peaceful mind, you have to have the peaceful, and you have to give up those things, isn't it? To find a peaceful environment to practice, isn't it? You have to give up. And it's just how amazing how most people just couldn't let that go. They tried to sit on do chair, and after all this discussion, and very clear, they talk about, you know, you want to cultivate peaceful mind, so you got to let go. And this, at the end, one man put up his hand, he said, Ajahn, so after this, I'd be going back, you know, to lay life. And basically, he tried to ask the question, how to be mindfully indulge in the sensory pleasure. So he still want to have to do that, but he want to attain Nibbana. He want to have a peaceful mind. You can't. Sometimes you have to let go, isn't it? Sometimes that's why it's your own choice. You make your own decision. It's not that it's bad. It doesn't mean that, oh, when we eat something, you know, tastes good. Oh, yes, it's good. We can enjoy the food. But without thinking that, oh, I want to get this. I want more. You know, it's okay, because it's just the feelings arises that moment. You leave it at there, it's fine. You know, the fruit is, you taste very tasty. Yes, very tasty, and that's it. You know, it's arise, it stop. But the problem is, we make up lots of story, and we get caught. We thinking about it. We spend the whole time thinking about it. How to go about to get this food is so nice, you know. It's nothing wrong. We don't have to feel guilty that we enjoy the food, you know. It's tasty. It's good. It's tasty. But it's not like spending all the time, you know, getting caught, you know, to try to look for this delicious food, you know. Then just imagine we don't have time to really, you know, have a peace of mind, you know. It's just so busy, so caught up with that. And this is not that it's bad. Immoral itself, but it's just that we're feeding our underlying tendency. This underlying tendency that keeps us in the samsara. It's not that it's bad, it's not that it's evil. So any questions about that? Yes. Sometimes the contact of the mind actually is a mental object arises. Sometimes when we see it, and this mental object, like, you know, like previously, is through our experience, you know, and sometimes it just emerge in our mind. Sometimes we see, certainly we think of someone that used to press our button, and then we started to get upset. And then we think of how bad the person, what this person has done. So then we are reinforced that tendency, that emotion.
So it's memory and imagination.
Yes.
Actually. Okay. Thank you.
So, and then now he said that do not get cast up on high ground. Do not get caught by human beings. No, do not sink in midstream. Then he said, what is this midstream? What is sinking in midstream? It's attached to living beings like people and objects. Get, you know, attached because like how, you know, this is my loved one. I can't live without this person. And, you know, and this is me, this is mine. Or the object, you know, we can't let it go, and then we're so attached. And then we spend so much time in doing that, you know. So sometimes this we get caught. We think that this is important to us, isn't it? So some people, you see, they spend their whole life, you know, accumulating stuff. And then they can't take it, you know, at the end of our life, we can't take it. Or we want the refuge, you know, in the relationship, because we think they make us feel secure, you know. So each one of us, we try to find security in our life. Some people try to find, object, like material things, to make them feel secure, you know. They like to accumulate a lot, and somehow they feel safe, they feel secure. And some people, they feel like they take refuge in relationship. Somehow, if I have my loved one or my partners, my children, you know, then they feel the security that, you know, my children look after me, you know, I have my loved one with me. That you need that, you know. Then you spend lots of time in getting this, you know, and attached to that. So when we do that, so we take our mind away. We don't see, we don't perceive things purely, and we don't see things as they really are. And we just get caught up, you know. So any questions about that? So what is getting cast up on high ground? That this high ground means that the conceit, that the ego, the sense of self. The Buddha talk about these three conceit. I'm better, I'm as good, I'm terrible. This is the sense of self, the ego. So sometimes, as you can see, sometimes when we practice, and when our ego getting bigger, actually we are moving towards the opposite direction. We, you know, rather than, because as we practice, actually, we when we see that there is non-self, you know, we see that, you know, the feelings is not belong to us. Even the body, we can't ask the body not to get old. We can't. But we identify ourselves with everything. With our loved ones. Like yesterday we just discussed about that. How, you know, sometimes we always think that what is good for, you know, my children, you know, and we never ask that whether what actually he needs. You know, we think that, you know, this come from me because we think that they are part of me. Me and mine. You know, the conceit, the sense of self, the ego. So when we attach to that, you know, then we get caught up with that. Then it's very difficult. We can't see the sense of self really in getting in the way. We become very controlling, you know. We don't see that that is non-self. And we try to control everything. And we get caught. So any questions about that? Yes. Yeah.
But it just doesn't seem to happen. And no matter how hard, you know, like for instance for me, no matter how hard I have worked for it, it is just not happening. So then that would mean that I'm clinging too tight to it and I need to just let it go. So when I just did
actually, these suttas actually, when you we read these suttas, actually just to remind us that we investigate whether do we get caught up with this and that, because we have been in the samsara countless lifetime. You know, it's not that, you know, it's not so easy that, you know, you started to practice and then straight away, you know, it takes time. So, for example, however much agitation, irritation you have, however much work need to be done, we still have to keep working with that. You know, we set our goal. For example, like we want to go to from here to there, but we have to go through a lot. We have to go through the phase, different phase, and you know, it's a process. And each time you learn, and it's not that it's good or bad. Each time we learn, and this is where our wisdom arises. This is where that actually the wisdom actually come from our life, our experience. It's our direct experience. Even the Buddha can tell us that you practice, but the Buddha can't practice for us. You know, he can put you in front. Okay, he show you the mat, but you have to take the mat and follow the track and see what's happening. Oh, yeah, you see this. Oh, you know, throughout my practice, I discover this. My sense of self, my ego, making me suffer so much. This is all wisdom. Then you start to uncover and understand yourself. Understand where is this me and mine, you know? It's a process. Then in this journey, we discover lots of things. Just like when we go on a journey, we see lots of things, isn't it? And then you say, this is how we see, we learn each time. Like for example, sometimes we get caught up, like for example, I told the other day, I shared with some of you that, like, when I was a lay person, when I was younger, I used to have my ideas of, I want my son to become a monk. So, when he was very young, teenage, you know, I was thinking I was so smart that I tried to brainwash him, telling him that to become a monk, you know, and keep telling him, don't marry and things like that. But actually, I realized that, you know, actually, fortunately, I have a little bit of wisdom. I realized that, and I stopped that without, unfortunately, didn't cause lots of damage to him. Sometimes it's very damaging. This is how we impose our ideas on others, a sense of self, rather than we just respect and love the person as they, love them as they are, rather than we try to impulse that. It's up to him. He choose the path. I cannot live for him. What I think that is good for the person might not be happy with that. But this is how our ego, we sometimes cause lots of suffering, not only to ourselves and to others, and then we get upset. You say, you know, it's good for you, you know, isn't it? You can practice it. The person is not there yet. We can't push, you know, and they have the choice, you know. So it doesn't mean that this is my children, that, you know, sometimes this is how we think that what is good for them, and then we think that to avoid them to suffer. No, we have to grow from that. We have to go through the process, that whole experience. Then we learn. That is where, because sometimes you cannot tell the person. The person have to realize it themselves. Have their own wisdom to understand that. And we can't do it for others. We really can't. You know. And sometimes you think, oh, so clear. Why did that person see it? You know. Because you can't force them. So, but we can always, you know, give them support. We can always help whoever want to practice. So, and I realized that he will become very guilty if next time, you know, it's just normal when a young boy grow up, like teenage, like he got attraction, you know, to lady, then he will feel so guilty, so terrible. Isn't it? Because I keep telling him that it's bad. Isn't it? Then actually, I'm not really helping him. It's rather than he himself do. He himself realize that what is really what he really wants. Sometimes what he need. What really, what make him really feel happy and at ease with. Not that I try to tell him that what is good for him. You know. And this is how it's come from our ego sometimes. We cause lots of damage. Not only, you know, to ourselves and to others, you know. And that, because when we cause a lot of harm or hurts to others, actually, we are hurting ourselves. We are harming ourselves. When we harm others, actually, we are harming ourselves too. Because of this ego. So, is it answer your question?
Sort of.
Sort of, okay. So, so there is that. What is getting caught by human beings? What is getting caught by non-human beings? This is that is caught by human beings. That is actually referred to like the Buddha said like as a monastic. So we improperly mingling with lay people. Like it's not that. Especially doing things that is not appropriate for a monastic. But here is also can refer to, is also relevant to lay people. That is who you associate with. You know, it's just like yesterday we have the KM group. We also discussed about how important that who you associate with. Because if someone, if you associate with someone, you know, that they have lots of negative talks, you know, and they're very gross, you know, and their behavior pattern, you know, is very gross, you know, their conduct. And after a while, we become like them. So then we get caught. They said, in one of the sutras, when Ananda asked said to the Buddha, he said, oh, it's very important to have a companion in the holy life that is a good friend, you know, in the holy life. It's half of the holy life. Then the Buddha said, no, it's the whole of a holy life. Because sometimes it's important when we practice. Sometimes a lot of people think that, you know, oh, only I just diligently just keep meditating, you know, then I'll eventually get enlightened. No, we have to create the conducive environments for us. So, in one of the sutras that the Buddha did mention in this Anguttara Nikaya, that one of the factors that that help us to create this conducive environments, the Buddha said that is associate with the wise. Because when you associate with someone wise, you learn a lot. And you talk something that, you know, so you inspire. For example, if you associate with someone wise, and then you have this Dharma discussion, and then you're inspired, you go back. When you sit in meditation, your mind calms down easily. Imagine if you just have a fight with someone, just have a quarrel with someone, you try to go back and sit down and meditate, what comes out? Isn't it? That is because the person who you associate with, that is that kind of conversation you have. You know, it's important. Because this is how, after this conversation, we know for ourselves, isn't it, if we have, you know, conversation with some other people, you know, if it's negative one, we sit down, our mind naturally, you know, repeat what we said. You know, the conversation, we can't help it, it just comes out, you know. Oh, you know, all the conversation, all what we talk about, what we discuss about, it comes out. You know? So just imagine if you are constantly associated with someone, you know, with the kind of behavior and talking about negative things, you know. So, and then you always like to argue, you know, and like to argue and like to quarrel. And you go back, this is what comes up in your mind. They say it's important that actually we create that conducive environment. It's not that only meditation is only one factor. It's not that, oh, I don't do anything, you know, only meditate. Last time also I was thinking like that when I first, you know, started to meditate. Then, because sometimes, when you read some of the suttas that, you know, and they say, oh yeah, meditation, you know, actually one moment of awareness and mindfulness is better than, you know, how 100 years of you live in, you know, without mindfulness, you know, and mingling around with others people. Then I think, oh, this is the only way, you know. I just meditate. Then somehow I just keep meditate, and then I got enlightened. But actually, it's a whole path of practice, you know, the right attitude. We have to keep our sila, our behavior, purify our behavior pattern, because there is a causal defilements, you know, like our bodily speech and mind. So the defilements, like craving, you know, that is very subtle, like those underlying tendency, you know, the subtle craving, that is much difficult to deal with. If we can't let go of the causal defilements, how are we going to let go of the more refined? Because the refinement you can't see. And sometimes we keep doing it without knowing that we are doing it. Because we don't see. Because it's very refined. Too subtle that we can't see. Of course, sometimes like the more gross type of defilements we can see when you're really, really very angry. That is a causal one. But sometimes when we started to feel a little bit agitated, actually, it is anger. But because you don't feel that angry, but you feel a little bit of, you know, annoyed. But actually, this annoying itself actually is anger, is a hatred. But because it's more subtle, but sometimes people don't think that this is anger, this is hatred. You know, because it seems like, you know, people think that only when you're shouting to another person, scolding the other person, or hitting the other person, then only you said, this is you are angry, you know. But that is really gross, you know. So of course we have to, you know, let go of the, be able to let go of the causal defilements in order to work with our more subtle defilements, you know. So, and what is getting caught by non-human beings? These non-human beings actually is that when someone, I had one of my friends also the same, and I met her many years ago when we in the Buddhist circus, and she told me that I never want to get enlightened, and I do want to realize Nibbana. I want to be reborn in the Deva realm. I want to be the Deva, the deities, you know. This is, and some people, you know, do all these offering things to the Devas, you know, and want to be reborn, you know. And then some people even for her, her intention of offering dana is to have lots of merits so that she can reborn in the heavenly realm, in the Deva realm. And she's just amazing. She's been a Buddhist, like she's been supporting many monks, and she's been many years, 30 years out there. But it's really stick to her mind that she just want to reborn in the heavenly realm. She's doing all these things, you know. And even she meditates, she meditates, she go for retreat and all this. But for her goal is to reborn in heavenly realm. And sometimes, like, you know, and it's so ingrained in her. Like, she keep, and then she just keep telling us that, you know, I want to reborn in the heavenly realm. Because of, she's throughout her life, since she was born, she have a very, very good life. Like she enjoy, like she's the parents, you know, love her so much. She got everything, and even she married, husband also pampered her, and even her children is so good. So to her, like, you know, she cannot, you know, she everything, like, even if she go anywhere, practice also, she make sure that it's comfortable, you know. She can't share room, she can't do this, she can't, you know. And it's so difficult. And she hardly, like, in her whole life, like, she hardly has that, it's not that she don't have suffering. It's the only thing that, because sometimes when we get caught up, we don't see that it's a suffering. It's just, for example, it's like myself, you know, before I become a nun, when I was a lay person, that time I enjoy doing that, I don't see that it's a suffering. Because that time when you get caught, you don't see that it's a suffering. You know, until when I stopped doing that, I realized that, oh, you know, when I was a lay person, I spent so much time, you know, going to hair salon, beauty salon, and beautifying myself, and get nice dress, and, you know, get nice food, you know, things like that. But actually, the moment I stopped doing that, I can really see the difference when I start meditating and practice. I can really see that, actually, previously, I have so much suffering, I can't see that it's a suffering. I perceive that as happiness. And I look back, my gee, I said, gosh, so much suffering. Like, for example, like, I put my nail polish on and I refuse to do housework because it will come out. And then when it comes out, I got upset. Actually, it's suffering. But until when I stop doing that and I look back, I can see that I've been perceiving this suffering as happiness. And in fact, I was enjoying doing that. But until when I stopped doing that, I can feel that a relief. Actually, I feel the freedom. Like, no need to worry about what I'm going to dress up tomorrow. And, you know, and no need to spend all this. I feel so free and so relaxed. It's just like that time when you get caught, it's just like the tadpole in the water. You never know what is dry land until one day you experience, right? Oh, actually, without that, it's so good, you know? But that time you can't see, you know? They say it's easy for us to see, you know, to see the other person, you know, a mistake. But when we are in it, we can't see. Unless we have the awareness, we have the mindfulness, you know, we have the clarity of mind, be able to see that. If not, you can't see, you know. And sometimes, even people can't tell us. We have to do the practice, we have to realize it ourselves. So, any more questions about that? So, and then now they say, what is that, non-human being, and then what is inwardly getting caught in whirlpools, that is indulged in sensory pleasure, then you're always thinking of, you know, how to have this pleasure, you know, the sensory pleasure, keep chasing after this. Just imagine if we keep chasing after this, our mind never be peaceful, isn't it? Never be calm. Only when our mind, you know, become peaceful and calm, then only we think, we can only see things as they really are. And that is where the wisdom arises. So we need to have the peaceful mind and calm mind to see things as they really are, to see things clearly. So even we know for ourselves when we are very confused. So when we need to calm ourselves down, make ourselves peaceful. So when you're peaceful and calm, and you just, a lot of things you resolve, you see, you know, actually not a big deal, you know, but sometimes when we get caught, we can't see, you know. So it's like just chasing after, you know, all this, you know, sensory pleasure, want to have, you know, all this enjoyment, you know, chasing after that. And your mind is just so busy. So it's very difficult. It's just like just now I talked about the person asked how to be mindfully indulged in sensory pleasure and not to attach to that. Do you think that we would attach to that? No, isn't it? But this is how some people want to get enlightened and don't want to give up that. Want to chasing after this the sensual pleasure. So, and what is inward rottenness? That is he said, this is actually like a monk or nuns, you know, the Buddha said like, and from outside, they pretend like they're so virtuous, but inside, they're not really keeping the precept. Like sometimes people just outside, you know, they can only talk, but, you know, they're not walking the talk, you know, they're not living it. So they talk, but actually they're not immoral. So outside, you know, they pretend, they behave like someone, you know, virtuous, but inside, it's not. Inside is immoral, the person, like, lots of unwholesome qualities, you know, and doing a lots of unwholesome deeds, but outside pretend to be really, you know, a virtuous person. And that is called inwardly rotten. So this is what is, this means. So they said, so the near shore, because this is, this one already explained to you, so I just repeat only the near shore, because this is a destination of the six sense internal sense space. The far shore is a destination of the six external sense space. Sinking in midstream, this is destination for delight and lust. Getting cast up on high ground, this is destination for the conceit I am. And what because? Is getting caught by human beings here, someone live in association with lay people, he rejoices with them and sorrow with them. He's happy when they are happy and sad when they are sad, and he involves himself in the affairs and duties. This is called getting caught by human beings. And what because is getting caught by non-human beings here, someone lives the holy life with the aspiration to be born into a certain order of day, was thinking by this virtue or by vows or austerities or holy life, I will become a deva or one amongst the devas. This is called getting caught by non-human beings. Getting caught in a whirlpool. This bhikkhus is a destination for the five courts of sensual pleasure. And what bhikkhus is inward rottenness. Here, someone is immoral, one of evil character, of impure and suspect behavior, secretively in his act, no ascetic thought claiming to be one, no celibate thought claiming to be one, inwardly rotten, corrupt, depraved, and this is called inward rottenness. So now on that occasion, the cowherd Nanda was standing near the Blessed One. He then said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, I will not veer towards the near shore, I will not veer towards the far shore, I will not sink in midstream, I will not get cast up on high ground. I will not get caught by human beings. I will not get caught by non-human beings. I will not get caught in a whirlpool. I will not become inwardly rotten. May I receive the going forth under the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination. In that case, Nanda, return the cows to the owners. The cows will go back to, of their own accord. Venerable Sir, out of attachment to the calves, returns the cows to the owners, Nanda. Then the cowherd, Nanda, returned the cows to the owners, came back to the Blessed One and said, the cows have been returned to the owners, Venerable Sir. May I receive the going forth under the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination. Then the cowherd, Nanda, received the going forth under the Blessed One, and he received the higher ordination, and soon, no long after his higher ordination, dwelt alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the Venerable Ananda became one of the Arahants. So they said, if we don't have all these eight, you know, get caught up in these eight thoughts, you know, then, we just follow, practice the middle way, that is the Noble Eightfold Path, then this is the way to Nibbana, this is the way to liberation and freedom. So this is today's sutta class. So any more questions or comments?
More of a comment than a question, but I just think the whirlpool simile is quite good for sensual pleasure, because it's sort of like chasing after something or repeating something over and over, because you know it doesn't last. You have to keep chasing it again.
Yeah,
so it's because, quite good that way.
Yeah, because it's very fleeting, and this is how when you're chasing after those things, each time you want greater and greater excitement, and that don't excite you anymore, and you want more and more. And that is, you can never fulfill. That is the danger of that. Yes, yeah, it's very good that you bring that up. Yeah, it's a good point. So any more questions or comments? So now then we can end the class.